Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Well, my guest, Jane Lee Rankin, was 37 and a breast cancer survivor, only 18 months in remission. She received news that upended her life. She was pregnant, and her boyfriend wouldn't commit, and her father was unsupportive, so she decided to raise the baby by herself, despite the scorn of her hometown. By 40, armed only with a dream and a toddler, Lee marched into Banner Elk, North Carolina, a metropolitan area. Banner Elk, North Carolina, a place where she knew no one, to start an alpaca farm with zero experience. Now she's the author of Farm Family, a solo mom's memoir of finding home, happiness, and alpacas. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Jane Lee Rankin, go to janeleerankin.com. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So I wasn't sure whether to call you Jane or Lee. I went with Jane. I forgot to check with you ahead of time. Is Jane okay?
Jane is fine.
Okay.
Jane is
fine. In your honor, I was trying to wear an alpaca shirt, but I couldn't get one off your alpaca's back. So I'm just going with my regular shirt. So there you have it.
There you go.
Well, given the background that I just gave with the audience, and I knew you had a sense of humor, so it was fine for me to attempt humor with you. But to decide to just move to a small town, how did you pick that town, number one? How did you decide on alpaca versus, I don't know, not synthetic nylon or, you know, original cotton or hops for
nylon
beer?
Nylon animals, right?
Yeah, exactly. Tell us all about that. How did all that happen?
So I had been to the mountains of North Carolina before with a book I had written before this one called Cooking Up a Storm. It was a cookbook about my nanny growing up in Kentucky. Anyway, I had been to this area. So this was the first area when I had the idea to raise alpacas and move. This was the first area we came to look for some place to live and to check and see if it felt like the right place to be. It wasn't like it was just, you know, pick a place on the map. I had actually been here twice for book signings and really loved the area. And I had been up there in the Catskills, sort of the Liberty Monticello area of the Catskills, if you know the Catskills.
So you were a comedian there in the 50s.
I was not a comedian. No, I was working at a retreat center and then I went to culinary school up there. So that's how I was in the Catskills. And I lived on a 7-acre piece of an old dairy farm, actually with the original dairy barn in my front yard when I lived there. So that was where I fell in love with mountains and rural living. So that was maybe the first seed of the planting the seed of farm, you know, having a farm and living on a farm. So,
but it does take guts to just uproot yourself with a kid.
It definitely does. It definitely does. And, you know, looking back on it, it took a lot of guts to do it. I don't know what I look back and think, what was I thinking? And I had met an alpaca. So the other piece of this is that I met an alpaca at the Kentucky State Fair in 2000. And absolutely, like, time stopped. I fell in love. I looked into its eyes. I was just like totally enamored. And I knew, like, in that moment that that's what I wanted to do was raise alpacas. So that was where the dream of an alpaca farm started. And we can do a lot when we have a dream. So I had this dream that I wanted to raise alpacas. I wanted to be in the mountains. And I picked North Carolina to do that. So then it all kind of came together.
When you decided on alpacas, I mean, it's a very unusual animal. Everybody
yes.
loves alpaca. No doubt about that. How many do you have currently?
We currently have 20.
Okay.
So, which is a medium to small size farm. You know, there's farms
right.
that have 2, 3, right. all the way up to 100, more than 100. So we're probably considered on the, like, the large end of small in terms of farms.
Or the small end of large.
No, we're really the large end of small.
Okay, fair.
Because medium size would be 40, 50, 60 probably.
Oh, okay.
And then we go up from there. Yeah.
This is going to sound like a naive question, but do you raise the alpaca primarily for the alpaca?
We raise them for their fiber. So we shear them just like
I was going to say fur, but it's really fiber. So yeah.
Well, fur or fiber. So we shear them once a year, just like you would shear a sheep. right? And we harvest their fiber. And then we turn that into, we work with a fiber co-op. We turn it into socks. We also turn it into yarn and other products that we sell here at the farm. So it's a very interesting, different kind of way of raising animals. We're considered a fiber farm. When we started, I was just interested in the alpacas themselves, the animals. So our goal was to board, breed, sell, and obviously birth. So we were just in that part of the business. Right. Now we're pretty much in the boarding, selling. We do a little bit of breeding, but our bigger piece of business is the agritourism, which is people like you who don't know much about alpacas coming to see an alpaca.
How do you know I haven't seen an alpaca? How dare you imply? You're actually correct. I've only seen pictures.
Well, that was a good guess. That was a good guess.
I haven't seen one in person, but I have seen one on the screen or in pictures.
A lot of people haven't because they are such a different kind of animal, although they're very popular right now with alpacas and llamas are very much in our culture and very popular right now.
I would imagine that's the shearing part, I'll use the word shearing, is that correct in the world?
That's right. Yes, that's correct.
So the shearing part has got to be a relatively small part of your overall operation in this sense. You mentioned that you only do it once a year and you only have about 20. So
you're right. It's a very small part of our business.
Yeah, but it's great that you're able to do that, though. And thank you for sending me two or three alpaca shirts. I really appreciate that.
And we're actually the shirts. We don't actually sell any alpaca shirts. We do sell vests, but our socks are what we're known for. The alpaca socks are absolutely amazing.
They're not itchy, are they?
They are not itchy because they're not wool.
Okay.
So alpaca is not itchy. It's very soft and it's moisture wicking. So it wicks moisture away.
Very nice.
So keeps your feet dry. And then in the summer, that means they're cool. And in the winter, that means they're warm.
Right. Exactly. And you sell that directly from the farm?
We do. We sell. Okay. We sell.
Can you order it on the website too?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can. Okay. Yes. Right. Yeah, from the farm website, you can order any kind of sock that we have. So
I want to talk a little bit more about the agritourism and then specifically about your book, but about the agritourism part. So agritourism, I assume, is the concept of enjoying the farm, for exposing the farm to people who are not normally in that world.
Yes. Yes.
And at the same time, you're generating revenue from that because they're not just going to come on your land and get exposed to a
pack. Wander around.
Wander around without some guidance and also some emotion, I would think.
Yes.
But.
Yes. And so I just describe agritourism as farms plus people. So it's when we bring people into the farm so that they get an experience, some experience on a farm. Sometimes it could be anything from a farm, a working farm that has a wedding venue and they have weddings there and then the animals are around, or a farm like us who are opening our doors to educate the public. Mm-hmm. So people come, we do a 45 minute to 1 hour long walking tour. It's guided. So you have somebody with you at all times that navigates you through the farm. We're a working farm, right? We've got tractors going around. Any number of things could be going on. And then you're guided around the farm and you get to see that, right? So if the beekeeper's here working with the bees, or if we're doing something with the animals, we're moving them from one field to another, or we've moved them over to graze a field, or if we're shearing even, you can see that process. And then we now have alpacas. We also have llamas, which are larger than alpacas and are used more traditionally for a pack animal or a guard animal, or a little bit more domesticated form of the camelid species. We have those. We use them for protection for our alpacas. We also walk them in parades, but we have those in with the alpacas. So the llamas and alpacas are together. We have a system of donkeys around the outside of our alpaca fields because we're in the mountains and we have lots of critters that like to eat things, and we don't want our alpacas to be eaten. So we're very serious about our guarding of our animals. And we also raise Angora goats, which are another fiber animal. They look almost like a sheep. They have horns. They produce a lot of fiber. They're one of the most prolific fiber producing animals in the world. And we shear them twice a year. So we're open for people to watch that process as well. So you can see three different shearings during the year, either two goat shearings or an alpaca shearing. And then we have a couple of horses that are rescues. We have Zebu cattle. one Zebu cattle. We have more donkeys. We have livestock guardian dogs that live with our goats. So there's lots of animals and lots of story. And we focus on the story because we're animal lovers and we care about our animals. And we have this, you know, everybody has a name and they have a purpose and they work together. Mm-hmm. So we bring you into our farm family by showing you our animals.
So when people come, I assume that you regulate it in the sense that you limit the number of people.
We do. We
on a
do.
Particular
since
day
COVID.
Or after hour. It's
yeah, what? Since COVID, yeah. We do. Yeah. Before we didn't, and right as COVID hit, we were starting to get so many people coming at one time that we needed to, and then COVID was our excuse to just say reservation only from here on out.
Right. When you started to do this, were you surprised at the number of people that would be interested in coming to the farm?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so it's unusual. So we opened to the public because people were finding us. So we live literally at the top of a mountain at the end of a gravel road. And when you get here, you're here. You're not on your way to any place else, right? And I'm in the South, right? It's North Carolina. So if you drive up the driveway, it's not like I'm just going to wave to you, right? I have to come out and talk to you. So we would have people just pull up and long conversations with them. And we realized that was enough people coming that maybe we had something that people were interested in. So we created our tour as an answer to people coming. And it's a very unique area. This is like walking back in time to be in these mountains. Mm-hmm. And the towns are really small. The people are really friendly. And if people would go to town, they would hear about the crazy lady up on the hill who had alpacas.
Apple Hill Farm.
Right. And then they would tell them how to get here. And so they would show up. Right. So people would hear the story and then they would come. And so then we just gave them a time to come. And it was not part of our original plan at all. We had no intention of having, you know, hundreds of people here or thousands of people in a year. And we hadn't planned on that, but that's what we do now. So.
So now you have a bigger business, but still the crazy lady.
Still the crazy lady. Yeah.
Well, that's good. What's the farthest someone's come to visit you? Is it from some other country or from some state?
We've had internationally, I'm trying to think what the furthest away, and we have people from all over the place come to visit. A lot of it's North Carolina, but a lot of Florida, New York. We have people from the West Coast. It's all over the place.
Given your background, I want to talk about the book in just a second, but given your background, how did you either develop or retain your sense of humor? Because you have a wonderful sense of humor. So how did that work, given the challenges you face, as I mentioned in the opening?
It's the only way I survive. It's the only way. I mean, laughter, sometimes you just got to laugh.
Yeah, so. That's true. Well, yeah. I quote a couple of people that came up with the slogan, and I've seen it attributed to two or three different people, which is you're only young once, but with humor, you can be immature forever.
That's right. That's right.
I always thought that was a nice way of.
I have the maturity level of about a 4-year-old. So
that's good. So now let's go.
Keep waiting for that to change. And it just doesn't.
No, it doesn't. I noticed. I was saying with me, it just doesn't. You know, I'm 27 and I've been waiting for it to change since. It doesn't work. So the book is called Farm Family, A Solo Mom's Memoir of Finding Home Happiness and Alpacas. And why did you decide to write this book, given everything else that's going on in your world, which is a very busy world? Including the bees. I love the bees too.
Yeah, yeah. So the idea for the book really came about from questions that we got from customers. And there was times that I would be leading a tour and I would be headed up the goat hill and you can see the view of the mountains from there. And I would be walking probably usually backwards and somebody would turn to me and they would say, okay, so what, how, why did you do this? Right. And it was just that amorphous question of they were sort of taking it in and were like, wait a second, how did this happen? And I realized I couldn't answer it. So the book was a way to answer that question. And it started out, interestingly enough, as it was going to be nonfiction and just the story of the store, of the story of the farm and how I started the farm. And it very quickly became a memoir. So I did not set out to write a memoir. I set out to answer that question, and it still is answered in the book. So,
do you find the reaction to the book is primarily from people who heard of you before, or you're finding that you're hearing from readers that knew nothing about Apple Hill Farm or you?
A little bit of both. Mostly people that know about it, obviously, because those are the people that we're in contact with that are seeing the book. But we are getting people that have found the book and then come to the farm. So a friend recommended it, or, you know, however they found it, and they read the book and then they came to the farm. So it's a little bit both ways, but I would say predominantly it's people who know about the farm.
So if they prove they bought your book, do they get free admission to the farm?
Actually, they don't. But I'll tell you a secret. So if you buy a pair of our survival socks, there's a coupon. Mojo gives you a coupon. Mojo is one of the alpacas, and he gives you a coupon for a free tour.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, given that you have 20 alpacas and you were mentioning about the socks, which I'm getting more and more intrigued by as we discuss the subject, and especially the wicking quality of it, which I'm very big on wicking. So not in the candle version, but the perspiration wicking, which I like.
Yes. No, it makes a huge difference.
Of course. How many pairs of socks can you make with the 20 alpacas sheared once a year?
It's a fiber pool that we belong to. So we pool our fiber with them.
We buy
way more socks than we can produce with alpaca fiber.
So the fiber pool is other participating farms in the area.
North American and North American farms that pool their fiber together, and then they make this product. And they're making it up. It's interesting the way they do it. So they collect the fiber, they sort it, they send it off and have it made into yarn. And then we're excited because they send it to North Carolina for the sock making. So the socks are actually made in our state. They won't tell us where, but they're made somewhere here in North Carolina.
Why won't they tell you?
It's proprietary information.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. You know how that is.
Yeah, the alpacas are not going to reveal any information.
That's right. They haven't told us.
No. By the way, are you preparing the alpacas to take over once you retire?
I'm trying, working on that. You know, maybe that's the next book, right?
I think so. How to train.
My joke about that is that I retire every day about 3 o'clock.
What is farm life like compared? I mean, we're all city folk probably. Well, not we're all city folk, but I'm a city folk. I respect and enjoy the farm, but to me, it's a lot of work, and you really have to have a certain mindset and energy level to be able to do what on any level farm. So I have a lot of respect for farmers that can do that, regardless of what's an alpaca farm or vegetable farm or whatever it happens to be. So how do you develop that mindset that, as you said, you retire every day by 3? you've got to probably get up at, let me take a guess, you probably get up at 3 in the morning.
No, I actually don't get up that early.
Oh, good.
So we figured out really early on that if you feed the animals at 6 a.m., they expect to be fed
and fed it too, by the way.
Yeah. And if you feed them at 8, they expect to be fed at 8. So we start our day when it works for us. And we're not, you know, traditionally, I think some of the early morning is your racing daylight. Also, a lot of the dairy farms, they milk their cattle 12 hours apart. They milk them twice a day. So if they milk at 5 in the morning, then they're milking at 5 at night, which is about the time it's getting dark in the winter. So they keep their cows on that schedule. And often they're working off the farm. So they're milking before they go to work and then coming back and milking again. So, so we don't have that kind of schedule. I actually am no longer the morning feed person. So the other piece of it is, as a larger farm and with people coming, we have to have a team of people to handle the customers that we have, but also to handle the animals. And so we have to put together a full-time job for somebody, because not many people want to work part-time. They want to work a full-time job. I mean, some of them want to work part-time.
Well, especially if you think about it, having to drive up the mountain to get to you.
Yeah.
You're the last one before there's air. I mean, that's it. So, yeah, they're not going to come out there for
last one before there's air.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. So you told me earlier that you find you and that's it. So, you know.
It's up. Yeah.
Right. So then no one's want to drive or walk or hike or however they get there and then only work 4 hours.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So we have to make it kind of worth their while and work with what they want. A lot of our team is students. A lot of our farm team has our students that are in college at in Boone, in Appalachian State.
Probably an agricultural college, probably.
So it's actually, they have everything, pretty much everything there. So they can be sustainable development. We've got, I'm trying to think what some of the degrees are that we have. Psychology degrees come to work for us. We have lots of different people that are looking for a job during college, and they love animals, and it's a great, becomes a great job for them. So,
speaking of psychology, what about the psychology of alpacas? Tell us a little bit about the animal.
So they're very different. They're very, you know, every animal has its energy, right? A horse has its own kind of energy, and a cow has its own kind of energy. Alpacas, and one of the things that drew me to them, was they have a very spiritual energy, and they're very attuned. Not obviously, because they don't make a lot of noise like some other animals might, and they don't necessarily wag their tails like a dog would, but they have an energy to them, and they're very aware of what's going on. And that was one of the things that I really liked about them. So there's times I'll go out. My favorite thing to do with them is go out and have coffee with them, is to go sit with a cup of coffee or stand with a cup of coffee at the fence line and just be with them, because they have a specific kind of energy. And we've had groups over the years that have come and done, we do like a, right now we do a barn quilt painting class, and we do that in a smaller field within the field. So you're surrounded by alpacas while you're taking this class. And people love that part of it, because they just get to be with the animals. They're not just walking past them in a tour, but they get to spend time with them. So,
well, when you're having that coffee with the alpacas, can you differentiate between alpaca number one and alpaca number five?
Oh, absolutely.
Have names for all the alpacas?
Everybody's got a name. Yeah. Everybody's got a name. Everybody's got a personality. Right. They usually know their names. So if I, you know, stand at the fence line and I'm like, good morning, Mojo, he'll usually look over or look up. Yeah, so they do. They recognize their names, and they have each have their own little personalities, which is makes it really fun.
Are they affectionate?
Not so much. They're a little bit more like a cat than a dog. So okay. It's kind of on their terms. There are some alpacas that are affectionate, but generally my experience has been they're not super affectionate. Okay. They're a herd animal. So they're bonded to the herd, right? And that's their jam is herd. You know, they're like.
but still, obviously, when you looked into the eyes of that alpaca, as you mentioned earlier, there was a connection. So there's clearly something going on.
Yeah.
What do you want people to take away from your book? Again, it's called Farm Family, A Solo Mom's Memoir of Finding Home Happiness and Alpacas. What's the main thing? Or there may be two things that you really want people to get a sense of reading the book.
So I want people to have somewhat of an experience of being on a farm. Like you're asking, what's it like living on a farm? I want people to come away with a sense of that. I want them to feel me or themselves as I'm sitting on the floor of the barn on a really cold night, willing an animal to live. I want them to have an experience. I want them to smell the hay and feel the cold floor and the fur on the animal. Because it's something that not everybody has, and it's not something, even if you came to visit, that you would get that experience. So I really want to bring people into what that experience has been like. And it's been a journey, right? Raising animals and alpacas has been quite a journey. There've been lots of things that have happened along the way. And bottom line, there's so much hope in it. You know, we can have a dream that we want to pursue and pursue it and go up against all sorts of odds and come out the other end a better person. And so there's that hope of humanity.
And I think your description of the farm life part of the book, you're not romanticizing it. You're giving them really a sense.
Oh, no, it's not romanticizing.
You want the animal, you're willing them to live. So that's clearly not a...
Yeah, no, it was, it is beautiful. And it's, you could look at it and say, this is the most beautiful thing. You know, I look around, all I see is the weeds and the work that needs to be done. But, you know, right, like it's, but it is a real life experience. Just like anybody else's life in a different way. It's... Right. There's a heartbeat to a farm, and there's the weather, and, you know, right now we're getting ready for a hurricane, right, is going to come. We're supposed to get 2 to 4 inches of rain. So we're concerned with making sure all the barns are stocked in case we have roads that are washed out, that kind of thing. There's a reality to farming that is not necessarily the same in everybody's life.
But you wouldn't give it up, would you?
Wouldn't give it up. And if anything, I want to do more.
Well, how do you find time to write? Because I understand you're not working as much as one thinks a farmer should work, which is like 24/7, which occasionally happens if you have some emergencies and stuff. But right. How did you set up your writing schedule to be in between the alpacas, the bees, the people driving up to?
That was really the hard part. There is always something urgent and important and non-urgent and non-important to do on a farm. Like, there is never an end of what can be done.
Exactly. There's never a dull moment or an empty
time. The best distraction for a writer in the world. Like, I mean, right? Because it's like, you want to be inside and write, or you want to be out there. And so I actually rented an office space in town and went away from the farm to write. I also set up, you know, a goal to write 90 minutes a day for 4 days a week. And I would do that here at the house. And then I also traveled some. I would go away for a weekend or, you know, 3 or 4 days and really dive deep into the book. And that's how I got it done. Everybody has their own, you know, their own path of how to do that.
Right. But that sounds very, very focused. The fact that you would rent office space away from the firm and travel and do all of that stuff.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And the office space that I rented was literally just a room. So I would go, and it was not very expensive. And I would just go and work there. And sometimes I just, you know, needed 80 minutes to get away from the farm and find myself again before I could write, you know, that kind of process.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Jane Lee Rankin. She's author of Farm Family, a solo mom's memoir of finding home happiness and alpacas. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. For everything about Jane Lee Rankin, go to janeleerankin.com. And Jane, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. And I am so hungry looking at your background.
Thank you. Everybody loves bagels. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.